Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Turning Towards Life. This is Lizzie and Justin. We're live on Sunday, the 29th of December, 2019. And you may be listening live, in which case, hello. And you could almost always be listening on podcast as well, and any other means that technical Justin has managed to publish us on in the world. So welcome wherever you are listening from, and maybe you're here for the first time, maybe you've been following us all along or somewhere in between, and we're just so grateful for your presence here. We are live, as I say, which means this is unrehearsed. This morning's bit of hook or by crook getting here is that I've just been being puked on by my little baby girl as I was trying to get online and trying to hand her over to my husband after breastfeeding her. And I feel like we're really living the by hook or by crook story and just keeping turning up, which is amazing. So it's I think our 119th time, is that right, Justin?
Something like that.
So it's a really big number now, and it's got that big because we come here whatever the weather, and we do this every Sunday. And so far I think we missed one when my daughter was just born, Justin, is that right? Which we had a pre-record for, so we didn't really miss it for everyone, but we missed it for ourselves for 1 week, and somehow then we carried on, which is completely miraculous to me. And each week we have a source chosen alternately by one of us. And this week Justin has chosen this wonderful, brilliant source by Claire Petit-Mangin, maybe. I don't know if she's French or just inherited some French name or something. And we will be talking to each other without any kind of rehearsal or any practice of or even knowing what each other thinks about this. So that's the spirit in which to listen as well, is in this kind of openness and curiosity of what comes, because we don't know what's going to come. So anyway, you are very welcome here. And Justin, it's lovely to be here. And thank you for making this all happen from your part as well and bringing this source. It's really beautiful.
You're welcome, Lizzie. Good morning, everyone. I loved your instruction, your invitation, Lizzie, to how to listen, because I think there's how we speak about it and then there's how the practice of listening that we can all enter into together. One of the things that strikes me about all of these sources when we read them is that there's so much in them, but there's also so much that happens that's not necessarily in the source itself, but which comes from being in relationship around it, which we discover in our own particular way as we talk about it. And so, of course, you could listen that way too. You could listen to discover what happens for you as you hear what we read, and also there's everything that comes for everyone who's listening as we talk with one another, the source that we make by our talking. And it's just struck me for the first time, Lizzie, that another thing you could do is if you're listening to Turning Towards Life and you find either a source or our conversation about it inspiring, is to do the same as we're doing, but with other people you know, which is take the source and talk with people about it. Or invite other people to listen to this conversation and then talk together about what happens from this conversation, that we can spread this practice of interpreting together and being in dialogue together very widely. So I am very cold this morning. I've just come back from a swim in the pond on Hampstead Heath, which I managed to do just between waking up and coming onto the beginning of this call. So I'm warming up with a cup of tea, and if you hear me or see me slurping away, you'll know why that is. And this source that we're going to read, I came across at the end of a really beautiful exhibition. There's an artist, a Finnish Icelandic artist called Olafur Eliasson, and he's had an exhibition on for a long time at the Tate Modern Art Gallery in central London. And as well as his amazing art, at the end of the gallery, they have a room with sort of like a pinboard that's about 60 feet long. And on the pinboard are hundreds and hundreds of photographs, articles, images, ideas, all kinds of things that have inspired him and his team who work in his studio. And this was one of them. It was right in the middle of the pinboard. I spent a day there just sort of soaking up, reading and soaking in it. And this is one of the ones that really struck me. And I think her name is indeed Claire Petit-Mangin. I think she's French, so this is from her. I consider the loss of contact with our lived experience as the main root of the malaise that affects our society. We become blind to the very texture of our experience, cutting ourselves off from what is closest, most intimate to us. We become blind to the very texture of our experience. In particular, we live in the illusion of a rigid separation between an inner and an outside world, between me and you, between body and mind, between seeing, hearing, touching, and tasting. We spend considerable energy trying to maintain these frontiers, which we consider essential to our survival. In the rare moments where our tensions dissipate, these rigid boundaries fade, opening up a vast space. We can sometimes have a glimpse of this. One day there's a book, a song, an encounter, or a special light in the morning through the foliage, and suddenly you surrender. You lay down your arms. Recovering contact with this tender dimension is a huge relief. When we're less on the defensive, less anxious to protect our borders, we become more loving. We regain our integrity, our dignity.
We spend considerable energy trying to maintain these frontiers, which we consider essential to our survival. In the rare moments when our tensions dissipate, these rigid boundaries fade, opening up a vast space. We can sometimes have a glimpse of this. One day there is a book, a song, an encounter, or a special light in the morning through the foliage, and suddenly you surrender. You lay down your arms. Recovering contact with this tender dimension is a huge relief. When we are less on the defensive, less anxious to protect our borders, we become more loving. We regain our integrity, our dignity.
One of the things that really moved me the first time I saw this, and it was this one piece, Lizzie, in the midst of a huge, you know, surrounded by other things, was her observation that our feeling of separateness, which certainly for me, my goodness, it's so easy for me to feel separate from everything and everyone with giant consequences, that this feeling of separateness is actually maintained for many of us by an active bearing of arms, you know, where she says sometimes we find ourselves laying down our arms. That, and this is a revelation for me when I start to see that to feel separate is really a defensive move. It's a way of protecting myself from being, from feeling too much. Really, it's a way in which I try and manage my own experience. Mm-hmm. And what's surprising about it is that it doesn't feeling separate, and all of the, for me, feelings, I'm sure this is true for many people, that our feeling of separateness comes with all kinds of suffering. It comes with a loneness. It comes with a detachment from our own lives. It comes with a kind of self-forgetting. At least this is my experience. And most of the time it doesn't feel like something I'm doing. It feels like a way that things are. And these words come to me so strongly because they say, hold on, the sense of rigid separation between all of these different things, between inside and outside, between me and you, between all of my senses, is something that's being brought about by a kind of action that I'm taking that's sort of faded into the background because it's so familiar for me. And there are these moments, and in fact, I've talked about this last week, but I'm just back from swimming in the pond. I'm still really cold. And I know that when I enter in the water, I very, very quickly drop this illusion of being separate from everything. It gets almost that the water sort of strips it from me. It's such a relief to find that I'm not different from everything else, that I'm not on the outside. I'm always on the inside of things.
Yeah. I feel particularly moved by the way that Claire talks about becoming blind to the very texture of our experience. And somehow, just that line helps me see how blind I am. And it fuels this kind of curiosity to think of what is a texture of my experience. Like, a texture is something that's very feelable. It's very intricate, but it's this, the feeling of something. You know, when you see something, you have to just give it a touch just to know what it really is. Because visually it doesn't kind of satisfy enough just to see it. You have to kind of touch it to know what it is. And I feel like that being a gateway to what you're saying, which is a freedom that comes from our non-separateness, even if it's a glimpse, as she says, it's such a relief. And what this paints for me is this possibility that if I might come close to the texture of my experience, really to see what it's like to be this life now in my senses, in the texture of things, it's a way that I can actively become present to create a kind of a gateway into that place. Like, it's doable, it's practical, it's taking a minute to see what my experience is, to be aware and to wander into the spaciousness that gets created. The vast space, as Claire talks about. And then in that vast space, to really wonder about what, you know, what's real. What I mean, so much of my life is like, when this kind of thing happens and I'm in the vast space, I can see so clearly how so much of my life is a system of constructs, of things I've made, of boundaries I've created, of separateness I've manifested to protect myself, to defend myself, to keep myself safe, my preferences to be met. And in the vast space that comes through being present in my experience, there's something much more interesting going on. Like, when that gets broken, if you like, the habitual ways that I'm protecting and defending and operating so that I feel contained, as it were, or like I know who I am, like I know myself very, very well. When that begins to kind of crumble a little bit, it becomes really very intriguing, almost like a huge invitation is being made. And what I really appreciate about this piece of writing is that when you were reading it to me, it kind of did that for me. Like, as I was reading it, I was like, oh. And I think this is the power of language, is that it can lead us places and really, really, really help us, you know, really invite us into different realms of understanding, of experience. And this language for me is extraordinary because I can feel my integrity returning when I'm not so selfish. Selfish meaning my preferences, my borders, my frontiers being exactly as they always have been, and the things I like and the things I don't like, and being very kind of clear about all of that. And when they blur a little bit, my sanity feels like it returns. And for me, it's also got to do with some element of feeling too. I know that this kind of Christmas time, you know, things haven't been very straightforward in our family. And we have this thing in our family called Christmas of Contributions, which means that you have to come with something like a song or a poem or a reading or a dance or origami or something practical. And my brother-in-law and my niece sung Isn't She Lovely by Stevie Wonder, but they made it about my new baby girl, and they sung it to her. And in all of the kerfuffle of is everything all right and what's going on and my confusion, I suddenly entered into this vast space, and it was so beautiful. And then, having entered into that space, I realized what I had been doing, which was being really worried and anxious, and the kind of lovingness that came forth because my boundaries were questioned by something that was very heartfelt and very beautiful, was like the deepest relief, like having a drink in when you've been walking for however long in a desert kind of feeling. And I think this is what this is speaking of, is that there is a well of refreshment beyond our defensiveness and beyond our stories. And I feel completely welcomed into that right now. And I'm so grateful to Claire for writing this, and grateful for you being the kind of person that stands and really looks and really receives what's being given in these things, in these exhibitions and people's writings. So I feel, very held by this and invited, and like also like it's real, like confirmed as well.
It's so beautiful hearing you talk about your experience of receiving this song from your family. There's something in what Claire writes about one of the ways sometimes that this happens is one day there's a book or a song or an encounter or a special light, and suddenly we find ourselves surrendering. And I recognize that so much in myself. I didn't even know, Lizzie, that I was defended. I didn't even know that my way of being in the world was a kind of giant protective act. Mm. And when I can't see it, all of the suffering that comes with feeling so separate from everything just seems like the way that things are. It doesn't occur to me that, you know, when you're talking about worrying, I know this one too, my own version of it. It seems so obvious that the thing to do is worry. Mm. Instead of the something that we can get shown sort of sometimes only easily from the outside, you know, when something reaches us through our protectiveness, which shows us that the very thing that seemed so obvious was the thing that we were doing to try and keep ourselves to be unaffected.
Yeah.
You know, like if I really felt how much I loved someone, or if I really felt what it was like to be in my life, or if I what is it then? I suppose one of the things that I've been learning recently is that sometimes for me, all of these strategies I have for keeping myself feeling separate are because I imagine in one way or another that I ought to be trying to control things, that somehow if I worry enough then I'll be able to control, the world will be in my grasp. And it's probably no surprise to anyone who's ever really thought about this, but it's taken me a long time to discover it, that worrying a lot doesn't bring the world closer into my grasp at all. It doesn't give me, it's like a kind of magical thinking. If I worry, the world will somehow bend itself to my wishes. So that's the first part. But the second part of it, which has been really striking for me to discover, and reading this a couple of months ago has really helped me with it as well, is to see that one of the reasons, one of the sources of my keeping a separation between inside and outside, between me and you, all the things that Claire says, actually comes back to her first sentence, which I'll just read again, where she says, "I consider the loss of contact with our lived experience as the main root of the malaise that affects our society." Mm. I realize, Lizzie, that I've lived for a really long time as if I wouldn't be able to cope with feeling what I felt if I really let myself, if I really dropped my defenses, I wouldn't be able to deal with it. I wouldn't have the capacity. And against that way of seeing the world and seeing myself, of course, being defended, like holding myself back without even knowing I'm holding myself back, makes complete coherent sense, except it's not true. Every time I get reached by the world and feel whatever it is, whether it's love or joy or grief or sorrow or fear or ecstasy or wonder, or, you know, I could list any number of these things. The truth is, I'm just fine. And it may be super intense and it may be confusing and it may be all kinds of things, but I'm finding out that I'm really quite capable of feeling stuff. And I don't need to patrol my own boundaries in this sort of super vigilant way. Don't let me feel this, don't let me feel that, don't let me feel that. And I don't need to distract myself. Mm. You know, I need to pick up a phone and look at it to make myself, to stop myself from feeling the feeling of being right where I am, or I don't need to numb out, and I don't need to do any of those things. But they are so they're so habitual, and they're so, for me, unless I really practice and watch, and that's one of the reasons why I swim, because the cold of the pond, and actually the colder the better, kind of shows, you know, like shows me again, but it's not the only thing that shows me that my bearing arms, I really find her language so powerful. Oh, that's what I'm doing, I'm bearing arms, like I'm armored. It's all based upon a deep misunderstanding of myself and a deep understanding of life, deep misunderstanding of life. And the line of this that moves me so much is the line near the end where she says, "When we're less on the defensive, we become more loving." Mm. And I can see that so much. I've been thinking since I posted this text on our Facebook group a couple of days ago, about a circumstance that I'm in where there's someone who's really cross with me for something that I did. And in patrolling my borders like this, like, I won't let any of that in. I won't be able to deal with the feeling of what it feels like to have someone feel that way towards me. My capacity to respond in a loving way that's loving to both of us is massively diminished. And mostly what I do is spiral around in feeling ashamed and feeling self-judging and self-critical and feeling afraid, all of which just is an amazing strategy. Now I read this, it's an amazing strategy for staying away from the tenderness of being in relationship with another human being and feeling together what it might be like to navigate our way through.
Yeah. Yeah. I just, as you were talking, I just realized my version of that is to imagine what's going to happen and then think that it's true. And convince myself that it's true. So not do the thing that would lead to the thing happening that I think is going to happen. Like, as in not go to the place to the house where I think it's going to be horrible because I believe that my story about it being horrible is completely true. And then working on my defensiveness, my worry, my anxiety as best I can with support, frankly, from other people. And then realizing that I'd made the whole thing up and being willing to admit I'd made the whole thing up out of an imagined worst case scenario of, as you say, me not being able to handle it. And reaching there, and not only is it, I can handle it, but there's nothing for me to handle. Like it, like really undone in terms of my, what I project onto something and what actually happens. They're actually two very, very, very different things. And so it just shows me how the worrying strategy that we were talking about and the, in my imagination, often are an armor against things that don't exist as well. Like if I am there with the person who's cross with me and I think they're just gonna annihilate me and I'm gonna feel such crippling shame that I'll probably die or something, that is different to what actually happens. And yet I wouldn't know that if I hadn't let my borders become fuzzy and gone there anyway, through faith and through loving and probably support from other people. And so there is a chance that I could just stay away from it all if I believed my borders and if I believed my frontiers. I would just shy away from all the hard stuff that I've imagined is hard. And yet it's either way more dealable with the ball than I thought, or it doesn't even exist. I mean, that's how powerful my creation of world is. So that I can imagine myself into things that just simply don't, aren't happening or don't, won't, or were never going to happen. Mm. And that holds me in a defended space. And so to be supported in my loving and to keep moving towards the things that feel meaningful and important, in spite of how fearful I am, feels like the softening and the tenderness that's required to live in the way that Claire is inviting here, so that we can be more loving. It's really a brilliant way of saying it all.
One other thought that I have is that many of us live without ways of being in contact with our own experience. In other words, quite before we're navigating this territory that we're talking about now, Lizzie, about what happens between us and other people and how we might allow in the presence of others, there's everything that we do that numbs ourselves to our own experience. And this is the place that Claire begins when she says, it's the main root of the malaise that affects our society is that we won't feel what we feel. We won't allow ourselves to be contactful with what's here and here right now. Mm-hmm. And I know that one of the gifts of this conversation is that, for me, is that being here and talking with you in this way is I get to feel all the feelings. So sometimes we can do this with one another. But the other thing that's also striking me is you'll know this, that we invite all of our people who participate in our year-long coaching program to take on a practice of just sitting and paying attention to experience. And there's a whole sort of trend of mindfulness practice in our culture at the moment, which seems to be a way of not feeling stuff. How to be calm in the midst of everything, how to not feel things. And this practice has been a big important practice for me is the practice of feeling it all. And I'm just feeling grateful in this moment for having ways of learning to feel again instead of learning to numb, which has been my way, and how much that matters. Somehow it can't just be rare moments where we have a glimpse. We can really help ourselves by practicing dropping our frontiers, the ones that we consider essential to our survival. And I know that this conversation is one of those as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So we've reached that time. I see where it's time for us to stop. I want to say thank you, as always, to you. Thank you to everyone, the many, many people from all over the world who are joining us in this conversation. You are so welcome to be with us, and we will be very, very glad to be with you again next week.
Absolutely. See you next week. Okay. Into the new year, everybody.
Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye.